University of Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education, November Examination Session, 2005. English as a Second Language. Paper 3. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your centre number, candidate number, and your name on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the tape to be louder, tell your teacher now. The tape will not be stopped while you are doing the test. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the tape back on. Now you're all ready, here is the test. Look at the questions for part one. There are 6 questions in this part of the exam. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. You will hear each item twice. Part 1. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. Why can't Abdallah play in the football match on Tuesday evening?
Here is the team for Tuesday evening's football match, Abdallah.
I'm sorry, I can't play then. I'm representing my college in a swimming competition.
Here is the team for Tuesday evening's football match, Abdallah.
I'm sorry, I can't play then. I'm representing my college in a swimming competition.
Question 2. What does Georgette eventually choose to drink?
That rice dish looks good. And what would you like to drink, Georgette?
I think I'd like a cup of hot chocolate. Or perhaps a cup of tea or coffee. No, I'll order a glass of orange juice.
That rice dish looks good. And what would you like to drink, Georgette?
I think I'd like a cup of hot chocolate. Or perhaps a cup of tea or coffee. No, I'll order a glass of orange juice.
Question 3. Daron is ordering a pizza. Which toppings does he choose?
Hello, I'd like to order a pizza to take away, please. A vegetarian one.
What would you like on it? We've got a choice of green peppers, red chilies, tomato, pineapple, courgettes, olives, sweet corn, sweet potato and mushrooms.
Tomato and pineapple, please.
That's unusual, but coming right up.
Hello, I'd like to order a pizza to take away, please. A vegetarian one.
What would you like on it? We've got a choice of green peppers, red chilies, tomato, pineapple, courgettes, olives, sweet corn, sweet potato and mushrooms.
Tomato and pineapple, please.
That's unusual, but coming right up.
Question 4. When does Fernanda suggest going for a walk and why?
It's nearly 11 o'clock, Fernanda. Are we going for a walk today?
Well, this paper says the weather forecast is very poor. Oh dear, becoming wet and foggy this afternoon, worsening overnight. We'd better get ready and go for a walk in about a quarter of an hour and make sure we avoid the rain.
It's nearly 11 o'clock, Fernanda. Are we going for a walk today?
Well, this paper says the weather forecast is very poor. Oh, dear. Becoming wet and foggy this afternoon, worsening overnight. We'd better get ready and go for a walk in about a quarter of an hour and make sure we avoid the rain.
Question 5. How far is it until Gift and Edril can stop for lunch?
Let's stop as soon as we can and eat our lunch, Gift.
Fine, Edril, but I can't stop on the motorway itself. We'll have to wait until the next northbound service station.
Okay. There's a sign. Services, southbound 48 kilometres and northbound 12 kilometres. That won't take long. Let's stop as soon as we can and eat our lunch, Gift.
Fine, Edril, but I can't stop on the motorway itself. We'll have to wait until the next northbound service station.
Okay. There's a sign. Services, southbound 48 kilometres and northbound 12 kilometres. That won't take long.
Question 6. How will Ahmed get to the library? Give 2 directions.
Excuse me, could you tell me the way to the library, please? I've been told it's in the town hall building at the very top of the hill.
Ah, it's better to turn left here and go to the end of the road, then follow the signpost for the library.
Excuse me, could you tell me the way to the library, please? I've been told it's in the town hall building at the very top of the hill.
Ah, it's better to turn left here and go to the end of the road, then follow the signpost for the library.
That is the last question in part one. In a moment you will hear part two. Now look at the questions for part two, exercise one. Part 2. Part 2, Exercise 1. Question 7. Listen to the following interview with a coffee grower in Nicaragua and then fill in the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Hello, and welcome to the forested mountain landscape of northern Nicaragua, where we're going to meet farmer Juan Diaz and his family. Señor Diaz, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Please call me Juan. My family and I are very pleased that you've come to visit our coffee-growing farm here in Nicaragua.
Juan, the scenery is very beautiful here. Have you always lived here?
Yes, this is the farm where I was born and grew up. My father was a farmer before me.
Did he grow coffee too?
Yes, but it was a different situation to nowadays. Did you know that over half of the world's coffee is produced on small family farms with just a few acres of coffee bushes? You see, I've joined with other small farms through a non-profit-making organisation called Freedom Through Fair Trading, that's FTFT for short, to be able to export coffee beans to a major supermarket chain. My poor father struggled to make ends meet. He barely made a living from the land. We were very poor.
How has FTFT made a difference then?
Well, FTFT organise a group of farms to supply coffee to world-class retailers, and they pay us a proper price for it. We receive a guaranteed fair price for our harvest. And they say that our coffee is used in restaurants and advertised as being from our farm, and that also when it's packaged to be sold in supermarkets, it has the FTFT logo on the side, so that everyone knows that we have grown the coffee.
This must have made a difference to the way in which you live.
Certainly. I can afford better food for my children, and they are growing fast on a healthy diet. Also, they are getting a much better education than I had. They can stay in school longer and don't need to help on the farm so much. I've even bought a mule to help me on the farm with the heavy work.
Is it just your family who are benefiting from this cooperative of coffee farmers who supply coffee to FTFT?
Oh no, there are many of us, all of whom have a better standard of living now. Not just here, but all around the world. Especially in parts of Central and South America, East Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa.
And this agreement is not just on an annual basis?
No. In fact, FTFT encourage coffee importers to give us credit to improve our farms and to build long-term trading relationships and therefore provide us and them with stability.
Juan Diaz, thank you so much for welcoming us to your coffee farm.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hello, and welcome to the forested mountain landscape of northern Nicaragua, where we're going to meet farmer Juan Diaz and his family. Señor Diaz, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Please call me Juan. My family and I are very pleased that you've come to visit our coffee-growing farm here in Nicaragua.
Juan, the scenery is very beautiful here. Have you always lived here?
Yes, this is the farm where I was born and grew up. My father was a farmer before me.
Did he grow coffee too?
Yes, but it was a different situation to nowadays. Did you know that over half of the world's coffee is produced on small family farms with just a few acres of coffee bushes? You see, I've joined with other small farms through a non-profit-making organisation called Freedom Through Fair Trading, that's FTFT for short, to be able to export coffee beans to a major supermarket chain. My poor father struggled to make ends meet. He barely made a living from the land. We were very poor.
How has FTFT made a difference then?
Well, FTFT organise a group of farms to supply coffee to world-class retailers, and they pay us a proper price for it. We receive a guaranteed fair price for our harvest. And they say that our coffee is used in restaurants and advertised as being from our farm, and that also when it's packaged to be sold in supermarkets, it has the FTFT logo on the side, so that everyone knows that we have grown the coffee.
This must have made a difference to the way in which you live.
Certainly. I can afford better food for my children, and they are growing fast on a healthy diet. Also, they are getting a much better education than I had. They can stay in school longer and don't need to help on the farm so much. I've even bought a mule to help me on the farm with the heavy work.
Is it just your family who are benefiting from this cooperative of coffee farmers who supply coffee to FTFT?
Oh no, there are many of us, all of whom have a better standard of living now. Not just here, but all around the world. Especially in parts of Central and South America, East Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa.
And this agreement is not just on an annual basis?
No. In fact, FTFT encourage coffee importers to give us credit to improve our farms and to build long-term trading relationships and therefore provide us and them with stability.
Juan Diaz, thank you so much for welcoming us to your coffee farm.
That is the end of Part 2, Exercise 1. In a moment, you will hear Part 2, Exercise 2. Now look at the questions for Exercise 2. Part 2, Exercise 2. Question 8. Listen to the following interview about the consequences of global warming in Antarctica and then fill in the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Hello, and welcome to Our World Today, our weekly look at the effect of human beings on their environment. We all think of Antarctica as being a vast white wilderness surrounding the South Pole. And we hear often of expeditions and scientific research being carried out there by international teams. Currently, all this is under threat, because if the world goes on warming up, then the whole face of Antarctica will change. Jenny McLeod, an environmental officer with the Antarctic Survey, is here with us to explain the situation. Is it really so bad, Ms. McLeod?
Yes, it is. Within 100 years, Antarctica, as we know it, will have changed out of all recognition.
How exactly?
Well, here are three examples. Ice blocks will melt and form a different landscape to what we've always known. Penguins will have to move south in order to find a cold enough climate, and green plants will begin to grow on the Antarctic rocks.
That doesn't sound like the land of ice and snow that it is today.
Exactly. There are three parts of the world that are warming up far too quickly, and the Antarctic Peninsula is one of them. Now, climates are always changeable at any point in history, but the fact is that this warming up phase is too fast and could cause many disastrous events.
The sea will warm up too, I suppose.
Yes, the Southern Ocean will become warmer. In turn, there will be less ice on the Antarctic Peninsula and some ice shelves will collapse. Do you know that already explorers and researchers are reporting areas of green plants perhaps 5 to 10 times more now than when the first research bases were built?
And the wildlife will be badly affected?
Oh, yes. I mentioned the penguins, but also the seals and whales will have to move their breeding grounds.
Why do penguins need to move?
Well, warmer air would bring more snow, and penguins can't maintain their nests in deep snow. The poor penguin doesn't want to sit on its nest with a metre of snow above it. Penguins choose their breeding sites very carefully, you know. The trouble is that penguins have to go to the edge of the ice shelf to feed, so the pattern of the ice is also very important. It's vital for them to find places suitable for both breeding and feeding.
Has all this global warming been caused by human beings?
We're responsible in some measure for causing the climate change. We're certainly responsible for exploiting the Southern Ocean.
By fishing, you mean?
Yes. Whalers, sealers and commercial fishermen have been flocking there for over 200 years. And now tourists add to its exploitation.
Tourists?
Yes. Last year, 13,500 tourists visited this area in cruise ships and disturbed the wildlife. Next season, there could be as many as 27,000 visitors.
So how can our listeners help the situation in Antarctica?
Keep away, promote awareness of what's happening to Antarctica, and keep up to date with details of our Antarctic survey on our website, www.antarctica.ac.uk.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hello, and welcome to Our World Today, our weekly look at the effect of human beings on their environment. We all think of Antarctica as being a vast white wilderness surrounding the South Pole. And we hear often of expeditions and scientific research being carried out there by international teams. Currently, all this is under threat, because if the world goes on warming up, then the whole face of Antarctica will change. Jenny McLeod, an environmental officer with the Antarctic Survey, is here with us to explain the situation. Is it really so bad, Ms. McLeod?
Yes, it is. Within 100 years, Antarctica, as we know it, will have changed out of all recognition.
How exactly?
Well, here are three examples. Ice blocks will melt and form a different landscape to what we've always known. Penguins will have to move south in order to find a cold enough climate, and green plants will begin to grow on the Antarctic rocks.
That doesn't sound like the land of ice and snow that it is today.
Exactly. There are three parts of the world that are warming up far too quickly, and the Antarctic Peninsula is one of them. Now, climates are always changeable at any point in history, but the fact is that this warming up phase is too fast and could cause many disastrous events.
The sea will warm up too, I suppose.
Yes, the Southern Ocean will become warmer. In turn, there will be less ice on the Antarctic Peninsula and some ice shelves will collapse. Do you know that already explorers and researchers are reporting areas of green plants perhaps 5 to 10 times more now than when the first research bases were built?
And the wildlife will be badly affected?
Oh, yes. I mentioned the penguins, but also the seals and whales will have to move their breeding grounds.
Why do penguins need to move?
Well, warmer air would bring more snow, and penguins can't maintain their nests in deep snow. The poor penguin doesn't want to sit on its nest with a metre of snow above it. Penguins choose their breeding sites very carefully, you know. The trouble is that penguins have to go to the edge of the ice shelf to feed, so the pattern of the ice is also very important. It's vital for them to find places suitable for both breeding and feeding.
Has all this global warming been caused by human beings?
We're responsible in some measure for causing the climate change. We're certainly responsible for exploiting the Southern Ocean.
By fishing, you mean?
Yes. Whalers, sealers and commercial fishermen have been flocking there for over 200 years. And now tourists add to its exploitation.
Tourists?
Yes. Last year, 13,500 tourists visited this area in cruise ships and disturbed the wildlife. Next season, there could be as many as 27,000 visitors.
So how can our listeners help the situation in Antarctica?
Keep away, promote awareness of what's happening to Antarctica, and keep up to date with details of our Antarctic survey on our website, www.antarctica.ac.uk.
That is the end of part two. In a moment you will hear part three. Now look at the questions for part three, exercise one. Part 3, exercise 1. Question 9. Listen to the following interview with a nutritionist about the quality of packed lunches, and then indicate whether each statement is true or false by putting a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Hello and welcome to You Are What You Eat, our weekly programme about achieving a healthy diet. More and more people are packing their own lunch to take to eat at work or school. Today we have a leading nutritionist, Dr. Jacques Parfit, with us in the studio to give us some advice on what we should pack in our lunchboxes. Dr. Parfit, I usually have a chocolate bar and maybe an apple in my packed lunch, and I drink a cup of coffee with it. Is that okay?
Well, the apple is healthy, full of vitamin C and fibre, but I think you need more vitamins and fibre. For example, a wholemeal sandwich containing salad or vegetables or something. I also think your coffee should be decaffeinated, and if you drink it white, use skimmed milk.
Why are you so interested in packed lunches?
We all need to change our attitudes towards what we eat at lunchtime. We researched what people pack for their lunch, and typically it is a white bread sandwich, crisps, a chocolate bar, a piece of fruit and a fizzy drink.
Sounds fine to me. What do you suggest we eat then?
You should eat at least 5 portions of fruit or vegetables each day. This helps to protect you against many forms of disease. Your apple is fine, but why not eat a carrot too? They are rich in vitamin A, which is good for eyesight and is an antioxidant, helping guard against cancer. If you are packing a lunchbox for your child, you should try to include a drink of milk. This provides calcium and is much better than a fizzy drink. If you have to put in a sweet cake or bun, try and include a wholemeal version, as this has a higher fibre content, which is good for the digestion. Actually, currant buns are quite good for kids, as the currants are sweet and contain vitamins and minerals too.
Surely this will take ages to prepare.
Not necessarily. Just think ahead. Buy wholemeal bread, not white if you can, and increase the amount of fruit and vegetables you buy so that these can be easily included. You don't even have to take a sandwich. You could take a pasta or rice salad or something.
Okay. But I'll still be desperate for my chocolate bar.
Fine, eat it. But it's no good having a healthy packed lunch unless the rest of your diet is like this too. Don't go home to a plate of fried chips. Think healthily about your whole diet. After all, you are what you eat.
Now you'll hear the interview again.
Hello and welcome to You Are What You Eat, our weekly programme about achieving a healthy diet. More and more people are packing their own lunch to take to eat at work or school. Today we have a leading nutritionist, Dr. Jacques Parfit, with us in the studio to give us some advice on what we should pack in our lunchboxes. Dr. Parfit, I usually have a chocolate bar and maybe an apple in my packed lunch, and I drink a cup of coffee with it. Is that okay?
Well, the apple is healthy, full of vitamin C and fibre, but I think you need more vitamins and fibre. For example, a wholemeal sandwich containing salad or vegetables or something. I also think your coffee should be decaffeinated. And if you drink it white, use skimmed milk.
Why are you so interested in packed lunches?
We all need to change our attitudes towards what we eat at lunchtime. We researched what people pack for their lunch, and typically it is a white bread sandwich, crisps, a chocolate bar, a piece of fruit and a fizzy drink.
Sounds fine to me. What do you suggest we eat then?
You should eat at least 5 portions of fruit or vegetables each day. This helps to protect you against many forms of disease. Your apple is fine, but why not eat a carrot too? They are rich in vitamin A, which is good for eyesight and is an antioxidant, helping guard against cancer. If you are packing a lunchbox for your child, you should try to include a drink of milk. This provides calcium and is much better than a fizzy drink. If you have to put in a sweet cake or bun, try and include a wholemeal version, as this has a higher fibre content, which is good for the digestion. Actually, currant buns are quite good for kids, as the currants are sweet and contain vitamins and minerals too.
Surely this will take ages to prepare.
Not necessarily. Just think ahead. Buy wholemeal bread, not white if you can, and increase the amount of fruit and vegetables you buy so that these can be easily included. You don't even have to take a sandwich. You could take a pasta or rice salad or something.
Okay, but I'll still be desperate for my chocolate bar.
Fine, eat it. But it's no good having a healthy packed lunch unless the rest of your diet is like this too. Don't go home to a plate of fried chips. Think healthily about your whole diet. After all, you are what you eat.
That is the end of Part 3, Exercise 1. In a moment, you will hear Exercise 2. Now look at the questions for Exercise 2. Part 3, Exercise 2. Question 10. Listen to the following talk about the world's first flying car, and then indicate whether each statement is true or false by putting a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the talk twice.
I'm Professor Cornelius, and I'm an inventor. For years, I've dreamed of constructing a car that can fly, and next spring, I mean to make that a reality. In 1989, I made and flew the first flying saucer. It rose to more than 11 metres above a grassy hillside. Scientists and press reporters came to photograph my saucer, as they didn't believe it. I have always maintained that one day I will produce a car that will fly, and that was my first step. My saucer had 8 engines to push it into the sky, but it could not travel along, as there was nothing built in yet to propel it. I flew it 200 times, which generated a lot of excited press reports. Since then, I've carried out lots of research. I've invested lots of money and obtained sponsorship to the amount of several million pounds in order to build my flying car. The result? The M400 Sky Car. In public trials so far, it has just hovered in the air. But eventually, it will adjust its engines and zoom along at 300 kilometers per hour. Like a scene from the film Star Wars, perhaps. It will be capable of cruising at about 10,000 metres above the ground. So next spring, I plan to trial my sky car again in California, this time above a lake in case of emergency landings. I will be the car's pilot, even though there is a queue of people wanting to have that privilege. Did you know that for centuries people have wanted to build a flying car, just like the ones in books and films? There have been 75 attempts at this, and some of the cars have taken off from the ground. Even Henry Ford was working on a winged version of his Model T car in 1926. In the 1950s, the aero car was invented, but only 5 were built, and really it was an aeroplane rather than a car. Nowadays, City Hawk is the best-known trialed flying car. An engineer built it in his living room, and his house had to be taken apart before the car could be test-driven. It has flown successfully, but only 1 meter off the ground. My sky car seats 2 people, runs economically on unleaded petrol, has 8 engines, and will cost about £300,000. Parcel delivery firms are already interested in buying fleets of the flying cars. Why waste time sitting in traffic jams when you will be able to soar above the rooftops?
Now you will hear the talk again.
I'm Professor Cornelius, and I'm an inventor. For years, I've dreamed of constructing a car that can fly, and next spring, I mean to make that a reality. In 1989, I made and flew the first flying saucer. It rose to more than 11 metres above a grassy hillside. Scientists and press reporters came to photograph my saucer, as they didn't believe it. I have always maintained that one day I will produce a car that will fly, and that was my first step. My saucer had 8 engines to push it into the sky, but it could not travel along, as there was nothing built in yet to propel it. I flew it 200 times, which generated a lot of excited press reports. Since then, I've carried out lots of research. I've invested lots of money and obtained sponsorship to the amount of several million pounds in order to build my flying car. The result? The M400 Sky Car. In public trials so far, it has just hovered in the air. But eventually it will adjust its engines and zoom along at 300 kilometers per hour. Like a scene from the film Star Wars, perhaps. It will be capable of cruising at about 10,000 meters above the ground. So next spring, I plan to trial my sky car again in California, this time above a lake in case of emergency landings. I will be the car's pilot, even though there is a queue of people wanting to have that privilege. Did you know that for centuries people have wanted to build a flying car, just like the ones in books and films? There have been 75 attempts at this, and some of the cars have taken off from the ground. Even Henry Ford was working on a winged version of his Model T car in 1926. In the 1950s, the aero car was invented, but only 5 were built, and really it was an aeroplane rather than a car. Nowadays, City Hawk is the best-known trialed flying car. An engineer built it in his living room, and his house had to be taken apart before the car could be test-driven. It has flown successfully, but only 1 meter off the ground. My sky car seats 2 people, runs economically on unleaded petrol, has 8 engines, and will cost about £300,000. Parcel delivery firms are already interested in buying fleets of the flying cars. Why waste time sitting in traffic jams when you will be able to soar above the rooftops?
That is the end of part 3 and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will stop the tape and collect your papers. Please check that you have written your center number, candidate number, and your name on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, the tape should now be stopped and all the papers collected. Thank you, everyone.